This is Naima Novetsky from AllahTorah.org. This Torah cast will explore the double discussion regarding the sacrificial service in both Vayikra and Tzav, questioning the relationship between the two sets of chapters. As both speak at length about the five types of offerings, the Olah, Mincha, Shlamim, Chatat, and Asham, we wonder why there is a need for each separate discussion. Cannot the Torah have simply combined all the laws into one unit? Though the two sets of chapters overlap in certain respects, there is much that is discussed only in one, but not the other. For example, Parashat Vayikra lists both the animals which might be brought for each animal offering and the various ways in which the mincha can be prepared. It further enumerates the various sins which obligate one to bring a chatat or asham. These points are all omitted from Vayikra 6-7. Parashat Tzav, in contrast, discusses the consumption of the offerings, detailing how they are apportioned between Hashem, priest, and man, while elaborating on the prohibitions of eating blood and fat. It also mentions two subcategories of sacrifices, the mincha of the newly anointed high priest and the todah offering, neither of which were mentioned in Parashat Vayikra. It is not immediately clear, though, what is the common denominator between all the various details which are unique to each list. What do they suggest is the main focus of each set of chapters? And how might this account for the division of the laws into two units? In contrast to the points which are unique to one list or the other, there are other laws which are divided between the two units, most notably the details of the sacrificial procedure itself, the slaughter, sprinkling of blood, and the like. On the whole, these are mentioned in Parashat Vayikra rather than in Parashat Tzav. Yet, there are certain exceptions to this rule. The two most notable ones relate to the Asham and Mincha offerings. Surprisingly, the procedure for the Asham is not discussed at all in Parashat Vayikra, but is mentioned in full in Parashat Tzav. The Mincha procedure, on the other hand, is discussed twice, appearing in both Vayikra and in Tzav. How are these exceptions to be understood? There are several other points of difference between the two units which are worthy of note. Though both units mention the same five categories of sacrifices, they differ in the order in which they present them. While Vayikra mentions Olah, Mincha, Shlamim, Chatat, and Asham, Parashat Tzav instead places the Shlamim at the end of its list. What is the significance of this distinction? Second, the laws of Vayikra 1-5 open with the directive Daber al Bnei Yisrael, targeting the nation as a whole. In contrast, Vayikra 6-7 opens with the statement, Tzav et Aharon ve'et Banav, addressing specifically the priests. Why is each unit addressed to a different audience? Third, Vayikra 1 shares that its laws were commanded from Ohel Moed, while the concluding sentences of Vayikra 7 state that its laws were commanded on Mount Sinai. How is this apparent contradiction to be understood? Were the two units set at different times? If so, when and why? In trying to understand the relationship between the two units, there is one other section worth exploring, namely Shmot 29. Sefer Vayikra is not the first time that the various sacrifices or their procedures are mentioned. Already in Shmot 29, when discussing the consecration ceremony, the Miluim, Moshe is commanded to sacrifice Achatat, Olah, and Miluim, a type of Shlamim, and told of their accompanying sacrificial procedures. What is the relationship between this list of sacrifices and those mentioned in Sefer Vayikra? How does the fact that Shmot 29 constituted a one-time command bear on the nature and laws of the sacrifices discussed, and how they compare to the later commands which were intended also for future generations? Many commentators attempt to address some or all of our questions. The 13th century Spanish commentator Ramban is one of the first to open up the discussion, paving the way for later commentators. He suggests that the two sets of chapters in Sefer Vayikra complement one another, each having a different focal point. While Parashat Vayikra emphasizes the nation's role in the sacrificial process, Parashat Tzav focuses on the priest and his responsibilities. This distinction is supported by and stems from the differing opening commands of each unit. While the laws of Vayikra 1-5 open with the command Daber al Bnei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel, the laws of Vayikra 6-7 are prefaced by the statement Tzav et Aharon ve'et Banav, targeting the priest. This difference in focus can explain many of the unique aspects of each list. For instance, Only Parashat Vayikra distinguishes between the different animals which can be brought for each sacrifice and the various sins and circumstances which mandate bringing a chatat or a sham, as these are relevant only to the Israelite bringing the offering, not to the priest himself. Vayikra 6-7, in contrast, speaks of the allocation of the sacrifices, since most sacrifices are split between the priest and the altar, making this aspect of the service most relevant to him. Similarly, it is only here where the mincha of the newly anointed priest is mentioned, as this can be brought only by a priest and not a layperson. Ramban's explanation can also account for the unique ordering of each unit. Parashat Vayikra lists the sacrifices according to the reason which leads one to bring them, moving from voluntary offerings, the olah, mincha, and shlamim, to obligatory sacrifices brought as atonement for sin, the chatat and asham. For this is what is of foremost importance to the lay Israelite. The sacrifices in Parashat Tzav, in contrast, are ordered according to the level of sanctity, an issue most relevant to the priests. As such, they open with Kadashei Kadashim, the Olah, Mincha, Chatat, and Asham, which have a higher degree of sanctity, and only afterwards move to the lower level Kadashim Kalim, the Shlamim. Despite these very valid points, there seems to be one aspect of the division of laws between the two parshiot which is difficult for this position. Why, on the whole, are the sacrificial procedures mentioned in Vayikra, which addresses the Israelites, and not Parashat Tzav, which focuses on the priest? In addition, this explanation fails to address why the Asham is mentioned only in Vayikra 6, and why the Minchas procedure is mentioned twice. It is perhaps these questions which lead others to present a variation of Rabban's approach. Thus, while the 15th century Spanish commentator Rav Yitzchak Arama, author of the Akidat Yitzchak, agrees that the two sets of chapters complement each other, he suggests that the distinguishing factor is not the different audiences as much as the different stages in the sacrificial service on which they focus. The laws of Vayikra 1-5 detail the bringing and preparation of the sacrifices, while the laws of Vayikra 6-7 turn to the aftermath of this process, the apportioning and consumption of the sacrifices by Hashem, priest, and lay Israelite. This distinction, too, can account for many of the unique aspects of each list. Since Vayikra 1-5 focuses on the bringing of the sacrifice, as expected, it is this unit which directly addresses the Israelite and details both the circumstances which mandate bringing the offering and the various animals which can be brought. In contrast, Vayikra 6-7 targets the priests, who on the whole are the ones who apportion the sacrifices. In addition to discussing the allocation of each, Parashat Tzav elaborates on the prohibition of eating blood and fat, since this is intrinsically connected to the allocation. These are prohibited because they are chilek gavoa, Hashem's portion. Finally, this unit uniquely mentions the mincha of the anointed priest and the thanksgiving offering, because each of these had certain laws regarding the allocation of the sacrifice that distinguish it from other offerings in its category. The distinct order of the sacrifices may also be understood according to this approach. In Parashat Vayikra, the sacrifices are listed according to the reason mandating their offering, while those of Parashat Tzav are ordered according to whom each is apportioned, in line with the theme of each unit. Thus, in Parashat Tzav, we move from the olah, which is given totally to Hashem, to the mincha, chatat, and asham, which are shared also by the priest, and finally to the shlamim, in which even the Israelite bringing it partakes in its consumption. Though this approach easily explains why, on the whole, the sacrificial procedures are mentioned in Parashat Vayikra, as these relate to the first stages of the sacrificial process, it must still account for the exceptions, the asham and mincha, which are nonetheless mentioned in Parashat Tzav. It is possible that since the mincha is a meal offering, which does not require slaughter, sprinkling of blood, or the like, its preparation is basically equivalent to its allotment between the altar and the priest, and so it is mentioned in both units, once with the intent of showing the procedure, and once with the intent of highlighting how it is divvied up. This approach, though, like Ramban's, struggles to explain why the Asham sacrificial procedure is mentioned only in Parashat Tzav, and not already in Parashat Vayikra, where it would have been expected. This brings us to one final approach, developed by the 19th and 20th century German commentator Rav David Zvi Hoffman, who uniquely suggests that Parashat Zav does not come to complement the laws of Parashat Vayikra, but rather those regarding the days of consecration discussed in Shemot 29. He suggests that Shemot 29 and Vayikra 6-7 together form one set of laws aimed at the priests, which were all commanded on Mount Sinai in the first year. Vayikra 1-5, in contrast, form a distinct set of laws aimed at the lay Israelite, which were only commanded afterwards, once the tabernacle was erected. While the laws of Shemot 29 are specific to the days of the consecration, the laws in both Vayikra 1-5 and 6-7 are relevant for all future generations. Rav Hoffman's theory rests on the distinction in location in which each set of laws in Sefer Vayikra was given. While the laws of Parashat Vayikra were commanded from the Ohel Moed, those of Parashat Tzav are said to have been given on Mount Sinai. Rav Hoffman points out that if so, the laws of Vayikra 6-7 were given before and not together with the laws of Vayikra 1-5. As such, they serve to supplement not those chapters, but rather Shemot 29, which was similarly relayed on Mount Sinai. One might question, though, why don't the laws of Vayikra 6-7 immediately follow Shemot 29? Rav Hoffman answers that Shemot 29 includes only those laws which were needed for the days of consecration themselves, while Vayikra 6-7 adds those laws which are relevant for all time. As such, the command in Shemot 29 appears in the midst of the directives to build the Mishkan, while the laws of Vayikra 6-7 are placed in Sefer Vayikra together with the other laws which are relevant to all generations. Several other aspects of the discussion in Vayikra 6-7 might support the idea that it is connected to Shemot 29 rather than Vayikra 1-5. For example, the unit's conclusion lists not only the five categories of sacrifices discussed in Parashat Tzav, but also the miluim, the offering given during the consecration ceremony. Similarly, this unit's unique mention of the mincha of the newly anointed priest is readily understood given its role during the consecration ceremony. Even the unit's mention of the korban todah might be connected to this ceremony. The loaves of bread brought together with the Thanksgiving offering are almost identical to the loaves accompanying the miluim offering during the consecration ceremony. Rav Hoffman's theory follows those who came before him in understanding the different ordering of the sacrifices and why only Vayikra distinguishes between animals brought and the like. However, it goes further than them in its attempt to account for the overlap in the discussion of the sacrificial procedures. Rav Hoffman suggests that Vayikra 6-7 omits the procedures for most of the sacrifices, not because they are mentioned in Vayikra 1-5, which was given only later, but rather because they were relayed already in Shemot 29. The Mincha and Hasham are exceptional because they were not offered during the consecration ceremony, and as such, their procedures were not discussed in Shemot 29. It was thus necessary to relay these procedures in Vayikra 6, together with the other laws aimed at the priests, which were relevant for all generations. Similarly, the laws regarding the allocation of the sacrifices are mentioned in Parashat Tzav, not in contrast to Parashat Vayikra, but because these laws were not identical to those practiced during the consecration ceremony, and as such, needed to be clarified for future generations. One might question, if the laws of Parashat Tzav were commanded before those of Vayikra, why was it necessary to include the sacrificial procedures in Parashat Vayikra at all? Couldn't one simply rely on what was said in Parashat Tzav? Rav Hoffman responds that these laws are aimed at the lay Israelite rather than the priest. Moreover, since only they distinguish between the types of animals that might be brought for each sacrifice, it was necessary to also distinguish between the various processes for each. Why then is the Hasham's protocol not also mentioned? It's possible that the Hasham is considered a subtype of Chatat, whose sacrificial process was already discussed in the previous chapter, and so it did not need to be elaborated upon. To summarize, Ramban and the Akedat Yitzchak both suggest that Parashat Tzav serves to complement Parashat Vayikra, accounting for the distinct units and their differences by suggesting that each had its own special focus. Ramban posits that the different units each target a different audience, Israelite or priest, while Rav Arama suggests that the different units each focus on a different stage in the sacrificial process. In contrast to both of them, Rav Hoffman suggests that the differences between the units can be explained if one recognizes that Parashat Tzav supplements Shmot 29 rather than Parashat Vayikra. One of the beautiful things about learning Parshanut is watching how commentators, despite living centuries apart, are still in dialogue with each other, often disagreeing, but sometimes simply building off each other to dig deeper and deeper into the meaning of the text. Our topic is a great example. The various commentators which we looked at don't fundamentally disagree with their predecessors, but rather stand on their shoulders, each building off earlier explanations to reach new conclusions. For more on this topic and other topics related to Parashat Tzav, please visit alatorah.org.